The Joint Committee on Ways and Means for Thursday, February 21st, 2008. I'd like to open public comment period. We have reserved a half hour at most because we have a lot of business to do, and the bills on our agenda have already had the benefit of public testimony in the past. But I would like people who are here to have an opportunity to speak. Rules of engagement are that speakers are encouraged to be concise, direct, and to the point, and limit their comments to 2 to 3 minutes. That way, we get to hear from as many people as possible, and as many people get the opportunity to have their say. So let's roll with that. I have one sheet that's been completed. I will call to people's attention if you did not get on that first sheet. There is another sheet posted. And I may ask people as well to make sure we hear on different issues. Every single person on this sign-up sheet wants to speak on bond authority. After we've heard a few people, if all of the comments have been about one section, I will ask if anyone wants to talk about another section so that we can hear that as well, just in order, again, to have the full record made. Patrick Boy, Allison Fox, and Cornina Miller, please come forward. Yes, Patrick.
Hello, Chair Nolan and Chair Schrader and members of the committee. My name is Patrick Boy. I'm a senior at the University of Oregon. I'm also the Associate Students of the University of Oregon Student Senate Vice President, a member of the University's Senate's General Senate. I'm extremely concerned about the University of Oregon Arena proposal and how it will affect future projects on campus. University administration made a commitment to students about several projects on campus, including a strategic housing plan to renovate the University of Oregon's residence halls. As a former resident assistant who worked and lived in the university residence halls, I understand that there is a great need for new campus living spaces. As a member of the University Senate, we began the academic year about hearing about progress made to use F bonds in order to revitalize university housing. Sadly, after a donation was made by Penny and Phil Knight about going towards the arena, those conversations about student campus housing ended, and conversations about building an arena began. It is extremely alarming that the focus of the University of Oregon has shifted from being on bolstering post-secondary academics with new housing for students to focus on building a basketball arena. Students live in cramped spaces that have not been renovated for years. Residents' assistants, students, and housing administration have been rallying behind the issue of new housing for years. The undergraduate campus living experience is a disgrace to the University of Oregon and considered the worst in the country by several authorities on the subject. If the donation lot was made, it would be very likely that we'd still be here asking for you to approve bond debt in order to rebuild what are regarded as some of the worst dormitories in the country. Sadly, when it seemed that we would be able to make change and improve a blatant problem on campus, the focus of the university has shifted. I urge you to listen to the voice of students today, and please do not include the University of Oregon Arena proposal for bonding debt in the House Bill 5100. Thank you.
Thank you. Allison, thanks.
Chair Nolan and Chair Schrader and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Allison Fox. I'm a junior at the University of Oregon and stand before you as a concerned student government representative, and an Oregon taxpayer. First, I would like to recognize that there are 10 students here today. We are not the only students that are concerned about this issue. We are just the only ones who are able to miss class. President Emily McClain and Vice President Chisan Sanoan also wanted to be here, but weren't able to. Emily McClain was here last week and spoke to you about the lack of student voice in the arena issue. We are here to second that and also to raise a question of priorities at both the University of Oregon and at the state level. Over the last 3 years, I've become increasingly aware that the university's priorities are unevenly skewed towards athletics. This has become blatantly clear in the current focus on the new basketball arena. While I understand the necessity of a new arena, I am concerned about the immense consequences of the decision. If the bond debt is approved for the arena, future capital construction will be pushed back.
Thank you.
There are many things more worthy for this bond debt. Classrooms are falling apart. University housing ranks among the worst in the country, and housing options for non-traditional students and students with family have continually been cut by university. If the bond debt for the arena is approved, projects such as these will be continue to be pushed back. President Frommeyer has been pushing the arena because he believes it will be a building that marks the entrance of the university and the city of Eugene. He also states that the arena will be a landmark building for the university and for the state of Oregon. In my opinion, universities should not be known for basketball arenas. They should be known for strong academics and for commitment to the well-being of their students. Funding for academic buildings, professors, financial aid, student housing, and the student union building show this commitment. Funding for a basketball arena does not. What I would like to point out is that this is just not, it's not just a priority issue for the University of Oregon. It's also a priority issue at the state level. This is a chance to ask, what do we value at the state level? We face a lot of challenges in secondary education funding, or post-secondary education funding. For example, the Classic Community College currently operates out of a building that has been condemned. Before this project goes forward with the arena, I urge you to take a long look at what your priorities will be in funding capital construction. Before closing, I would like to reiterate my support for the new arena in the future. However, now is not the right time. Please do not approve this bond debt in House Bill 5100.
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you. Yes.
Okay. Chairs Nolan and Chairs Schrader, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Karina Miller. I'm a junior at the University of Oregon studying ethnic studies. I am also the co-director of the Native American Student Union. Thank you very much for allowing me to testify to you today. I would like to address the decision before you to approve bonding debt for the University of Oregon arena proposal. There have yet to be very many student voices or concerns heard, or students at the table for this discussion, as you can see. As a student at the University of Oregon, I have concerns about the approval of this project. My concerns relate to the potential negative effects that this proposal might have on the student experience at the University of Oregon. First, there are more student, faculty, and community questions that need answers. What is the exact percentage that the UO will be at once you approve this debt load? The cap is 7%. The university administration has yet to give the exact number. We've only heard repeatedly that will not be close to the cap. What is my definition of close is different from the university's. Secondly, on a broader note, I understand that if the arena was called off tomorrow, neither you nor President Frommeyer could magically transfer the generous donations from Phil and Penny Knight to the UO Strategic Housing Initiative or for replacement of our dilapidated student unions, for example. I understand. My contention is that our priorities in post-secondary education are off. Until we improve the student experience at the U of O, we should not go full bore ahead with a project so large and so uncertain. As a student with more questions and concerns, please do not include the University of Oregon arena proposal for the bonding debt in House Bill 5100. Thank you.
Thank you all for coming to testify.
Billy Hatch. Stephen Wilkers, I'm sorry if I'm not reading the handwriting correctly, and Kate Jones, please. Who's up first? Please.
Chairman Nolan, Chairman Schroeder, and the committee, thank you for having us. For the record, my name is Billy Hatch. I'm a student senator at the University of Oregon, as well as an EMU, which is the Urban Memorial Union student board member. I come here as a student, as a member of the University of Oregon, and as a taxpayer in the state of Oregon, with concerns about House Bill 5100. The arena would be built with bond debt, with F bonds. These are bonds used in capital construction around campuses, including housing, student unions, the rec center, and all other self-sustaining buildings on campuses. There's a cap on it at 7%. President Frommeyer has been directly asked on a number of occasions to speak specifically about what percentage would be used with the new arena. We are told that we will not come close to the gap. We will not come close to the gap, but the percentage isn't addressed. This concerns me. I'm a member of, on two finance committees at the university, and I'm concerned if we can't pay back the debt, what's going to happen, and what even if happens if we aren't able to afford the cost of operation. When a Westmoreland student housing was sold by the university, there were promises made to build new graduate and family housing. This was done in 2006, and 2 years later, students are still wondering what happened to that promise. The university senate has met, like Patrick had said, and asked for a response from the university, and the strategic goal for housing has been taken off the table. If the new arena does not come close to the 7% for bond caps, then the effects are going to be felt for 20 years. It will be difficult to build student housing without levying a new fee on students. Additionally, as a member of the Urban Memorial Union, we have a building that's 60 years old, and its funding and discussion is not on the table. There's $10 million in deferred maintenance. There was recently a proposal to the university administration to have a student referendum, so students pay, you know, we tax ourselves, you know. But that was taken off the table because there's too much construction issues going on campus, and quote unquote, it wasn't in the queue because the arena is up for discussion right now. I find it problematic that F funds would go to university entertainment construction rather than making efforts to contribute to the intellectual and cultural development of our campus by funding issues outside of athletics like family and graduate housing and the student union. Why use our bond debt in a new basketball arena when it could be used to increase access to post-secondary education? A university exists to provide education and to create an environment conducive to learning. Sports should be an accessory. Until the problems involving housing and our student unions and other issues are addressed and numbers are specific, I urge you to please not approve the bond debt issued in House Bill 5100. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Co-chairs Nolan and Schrader and members of the committee. My name is Stephen Wilsey. I'm a senior at the University of Oregon and a former student senator. I would first like to say that it's not that I could miss class today, but that I chose to do so because I feel it's important for student voices to be represented and heard. I'd like to talk about risk. Risk is everywhere, and sometimes risks are manageable and some are unwise to venture. I feel like the risks incurred by bond debt have been addressed. However, I would like to specifically mention the Econ Northwest report, which will, from this point forward, be addressed as the dissenting report on the projected revenue of the arena. I don't have much to say other than that the financial success of this project has been cast into doubt by this report, and that the record should show that there is a lack of consensus on the revenue of the arena. A study from a reputable consulting agency paints a different picture than what has been sold by supporters of this project. And while I am not attempting to say the committee hasn't analyzed the risk, I do feel the lack of certainty of revenue hasn't been addressed publicly. Also, for the record, I'd like to draw attention to the testimony of Gordon Sayre last week. Gordon is the University Senate President at the University of Oregon. The University Senate formally endorsed these bonds, but last week Mr. Sayre expressed his trepidation relating to the uncertainty of the revenue of the arena. I realize consensus isn't mandatory for the passing of any decision, but there is enough dissent for this decision to at least be stalled until a more thorough investigation can occur with such high stakes. I'm basically saying we should wait. We need to be certain of the potential revenue of this arena before we assume the risk that will result because of it. I'm not against having the arena built. I just think that we need to be absolutely certain before we proceed with this, because the risk is huge. With that, I'm asking you to not approve this bond debt in House Bill 5100. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Chris Mullen, Schrader, members of the committee. My name is Catherine Jones. I come here as a second-year law student from the University of Oregon. I'm also missing class today. I'm also missing a training so that I can do tax preparation for low-income individuals. I'm here because I really care about this and wanted law students especially to have a voice. Law students, as you know, are a minority on our campus, and we, our campus is a residential campus and does not really support family housing and housing for graduate students. When I applied at UO and was accepted, I applied for graduate housing. After 4 months, I went and I got different housing because I had not heard back from them. After 15 months, they sent me an email to see if I was still interested, and I actually laughed out loud and sent them an email back saying, oh, I had no idea I was still on the list. It's been 15 months. I've gotten a place to live. Thank you. My experience is not unique. My friend Katie Staten as well waited 14 months for graduate housing. In addition, there are many, many people at the law school who have families who apply for family housing because with one or two family members as students, full-time students, they cannot afford anything else. They cannot afford to live in apartments on their own. My colleague, Emily Farrell, has a 9-year-old daughter, is married, and applied for family housing. She's put on a waiting list, and after 18 months, she was contacted and offered a house. The house had gaping holes in the concrete and in the basement, so she said, no, thank you, I'll wait for another one. The second house that came up didn't have laundry facilities as her application requested, so she turned it down as well. The university has a policy that if you turn down two houses, you are not allowed to be on the list anymore. So she was told she could reapply at the bottom of the list, and she decided, well, law school is 3 years. It takes 18 months to get a house. So if I apply twice, I'll graduate from law school before I can get a house. So she did not reapply. She saved herself $50. Congratulations. But I believe this shows that there's a demand out there for family housing, for graduate housing, that University of Oregon cannot meet and has not met. And I believe that those voices should be heard, and that if we come close to a bond debt cap here and we put off creating family housing and graduate housing for 20 years, that you're just going to exacerbate the problem. As well, I'm a member of the EMU Board of Directors and the Student Advisory Board to the Rec Center. The EMU is an affiliate which is also run on net bonds. The EMU has $10 million at least in deferred maintenance. We just had two catastrophic failures, mechanical failures in the last month, one of which resulted in the evacuation and closure of our entire student union. Thank God it was at 5 o'clock at night. If it had been at 9 in the morning, we would have lost a day of earned revenue. So the EMU...
Ms. Jones, could you wrap up, please?
Absolutely. My entire point here is that our bond debt could be used for things that it is desperately in need of, and I would ask you to not approve the bond debt for the University of Oregon in House Bill 5100.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Alex McGafferty, Jesse Hausch, and Peter Embark, please. Please.
Co-Chair Nolan, Schrader, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Alex McCafferty. I come before you as a freshman student at the University of Oregon and a member of the Athletic Department Finance Committee for the student government. I firmly believe that the UO deserves a new arena. However, potentially putting the arena in front of other students' necessities, like housing, does not reflect what I think the priorities of the university should be. As a freshman, I'm currently living in the residence halls at the university, and I was lucky enough to be assigned to the university's new Living Learning Center. This is a multi-million dollar complex that has both dorms and classrooms in the same building. Many of my friends and colleagues here have this privilege and have been living in residence halls that were built over 30 years ago. In this light, the University of Oregon is consistently ranked in Princeton Review's list of dorms like dungeons and has been on the top for as long as I can remember. These same bonds that could potentially be used to build the new arena could also be used to build new residence facilities and possibly even a new learning center, or at least improve the ones that are already there. I think that the University of Oregon's purpose is to provide a quality education to its students, and athletics should come second. I'd like to reiterate my support for the new basketball arena at the University of Oregon. However, when the university puts an arena before the educational experience of its students, I believe it reflects a lack of understanding of what the real purpose should be. As a student with more questions and concerns, I ask you not to pass the University of Oregon arena proposal for bonding debt, House Bill 5100. Thank you.
Thank you. Hello.
Co-chairs Nolan and Schrader and members of the committee. I'd first like to preface my statement with the fact that I'm an avid basketball fan. I don't come here as somebody that is against sports, but I actually enjoy the basketball scene at U of O very much. I've camped out for tickets and pit crew and gone to many games, and I value the sports scene at U of O very much. But while I understand the necessity...
Excuse me, could you first also start off with your name, please?
Oh, excuse me. My name's Jesse Huff, and I'm a junior at the U of O. While I understand the necessity of a new arena and how it will benefit the students of the University of Oregon, like many students on campus, I have concerns about the opportunity cost of financing it with the proposals, with the proposal. The University of Oregon is at a pivotal point in its history. It stands at the cusp of going from a well-respected state school to stand among the ranks of bigger schools like the University of California at Berkeley and UCLA. I support a thriving University of Oregon, but am against putting athletics at the forefront of the university's agenda. There are many other projects more worthy of this bond debt. University housing consistently ranks among the worst in the country. When I was a freshman, I lived across the hallway from a couple of students that had water dripping under their beds because they lived below the girls' shower, and that was not a fun living environment for them, I imagine. Housing options for non-traditional students or students with families have also been cut by the university in years past. These self-liquidating capital expenses are eligible for the same kind of bond could be approved today. Why use limited bond debt on a new basketball arena when it can be used to actually increase access to post-secondary education in Oregon? A public university exists to provide education and propitiate an environment in which students can learn. Sports should be an accessory. I'd like to reiterate my support of a new arena for the University of Oregon. My reservations stem from an apparent fundamental disagreement with our administration on the priorities of my university. Until housing and our student unions are brought up to the standards of student service, I oppose the approval of this bond debt. Please don't approve this bond debt in House Bill 5100. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Hello.
Co-chairs Nolan and Schrader, members of the committee. For the record, I am Peter Eubank, and I am an at-large member of the Student Billing Fee and Allocation Committee, as well as an avid member of the MacArthur Carr Pit Crew. Thank you very much for allowing me to testify today. I actually do not have anything to add. My testimony has already been addressed, but I would just like to reiterate the importance of the questions that remain, and also the attitude that we have as a state and a university towards post-secondary education. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. I have two more people to testify. Athan Papillon. Oh, same person. A fan. Maybe I didn't do that right. AS U of O Senate President. Does anybody know that person?
Yeah.
He got about 30 seconds.
He's been hired by a lobbying firm.
Some of these kids could be. They're good. That came sooner than you expected, I think.
Well, the rooms at capacity are now right at civilian. When I'm allowed to testify, so
thanks. Could you pull a mic and introduce yourself and
Hi.
Tell us what you want to
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Ethan Papi-Iliu. I'm the Associated Student Senate President at the University of Oregon. I want to thank all of you for giving us the opportunity to testify before the committee as we're on the breach of a very important decision and allowing the student voice to be heard, because I believe that's been a component that's been seriously missing from this conversation. And I'd hope at the very least, before this committee moves forward on a final decision, that at least table anything regarding the arena so that the priorities of our university can be at least reevaluated with students at the table. But, Madam Chair, before I continue to talk about my opinion on the priorities of the university and what this committee can do to help reorganize that, I'd like to submit a question to the committee if you would allow that.
I'm sorry, this is public testimony only.
Okay. Well, while it has been testified before this body that the construction of the new arena would prohibit the construction of other student projects, I hope that it is seriously considered. As an advocate for the renovation of our student union building, I fear that the construction of the new arena might prohibit that from happening if the bond debt is maxed out by the construction of a new arena. Just 3 weeks ago, a pipe burst in our student union building that houses several thousand students and programs on our campus. As a result of the pipe burst, several thousands of dollars has had to go into the renovation of the building, and a deferred maintenance cost continues to skyrocket as we defer this problem for years and years to come. I fear that the construction of a new arena at this time might prevent the university from addressing the construction needs of our student union building, as well as some of our classrooms and other projects that my colleagues here presented before you earlier. But at the same time, I understand that the construction of a new arena would bring new economic opportunities to my community and the state, providing me jobs, and that is a reality of the situation, and that as a junior at the University of Oregon, I myself will be looking for a job too, and economic growth is something that I'm seriously worried about. But I ask the committee to please table this decision to allow for more organized student testimony, allow for more student voices to be heard, because I believe receiving notification just 2 hours ago that this hearing is taking place, as well as all the other students that are speaking before you today, that's not a democratic process. And that doesn't allow students to come before their state government and ask them to have their voices heard, and to allow them to ask their government to help them prioritize how they want their student experience to be. Because the construction of this new arena does send a message, and I believe that we can change that by the decision of this committee. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. That's the last person I have signed up. I'm going to give one last call if anyone didn't know they were supposed to sign up. Seeing none, I will close the public testimony part of our hearing, of our meeting today. And quickly, committee members, I am going to open a work session for the purposes of accepting a report from the Department of Administrative Services. This is a report that we have all seen. Didn't this get passed out yesterday? It was passed out yesterday. You're getting an additional copy. I would accept a motion, Mr. Co-Chair.
Good Chair, I request that we acknowledge receiving a report from the Department of Administrative Services on additional compensation plan changes, made 30709 by any.
Senator Schrader recognizes that we acknowledge receipt of this report. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so order. Okay. I will now open a work session on House Bill 5100. Mr. Hill.
Madam Chair, if we could just wait one moment until the...
Okay.
So then I can make sure that we're all covering the same things.
Thank you. everybody. Okay. Come back to order. Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee. There should have been three pieces or three sets of paper in your handout that was just handed out to you. One of them is a draft budget report for House Bill 5100, which is the bonding bill. We discussed this bill yesterday. There are also some Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 5100. And then I also included the piece of paper that was the summary that I handed out yesterday. That piece of paper has just been updated to reflect the actions taken on the approval of the items that were discussed yesterday. You'll remember they were in yellow yesterday. They've now had that removed. All of those items that are on this summary page have been included both in the budget report and in the Dash 5 amendments. So with that, I'll back over to you. Okay. We'll take action on these amendments.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair.
I'd like to move the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 5100, please.
Senator Schrader moves the Dash 5 amendments into House Bill 5100. Discussion on the motion to amend. Senator Monroe.
Would it be appropriate for me to ask a question of President Frohnmayer?
Senator, I'd like to get this amendment done first.
Well, that's in the amendment. It's the arena project is the reason I'm asking when that would be appropriate.
I'd be happy then.
Mr. Frohnmayer?
President Frohnmayer, I have your letter here, but I want to put it on the record. Is would the going forward with this arena project in any way jeopardize additional capital needs of the university or affect them in any way, either positively or negatively? Talking about the housing needs, the student union needs, those needs that we just heard about from some of your students.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Monroe. The answer is no. The university has provided, and the state systems staff are here to verify, ample additional bonding capacity under the debt, specifically to deal with phase one of the housing strategic plan, which was presented to the State Board of Higher Education last fall. There are numbers of other student-related projects in the tens of billions of dollars, none of which has been authorized to go forward finally because planning has not been done. But the bonding capacity has been carefully reserved within the pro formas presented to this legislative assembly and considered by the board and by the university so as to make sure that all of these non-academic or quite pressing needs can be made within the bond cap. So notwithstanding my colleagues from the student government who just testified before you, in fact, we have considered these matters, we take these needs seriously, and we believe that we have provided in the foreseeable future for all of these needs, both those that we know about in housing and those yet to be determined in the student government process.
Brief follow-up?
Yes, Senator.
If we do not approve the arena project today, would that speed up in any way your ability to meet other capital needs on the university campus?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Monroe, to the best of my knowledge and ability, notwithstanding some fairly heroic activities that have been authorized by this legislature and by our own hardworking staff, there would be not one dime more for those projects which about which you just heard testimony. If this project had been canceled last week, than there is now.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to ask the questions.
You bet. I think the committee probably appreciates the information. Any other discussion on the motion to amend?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Gordon.
I'm going to object. I want the students to know that their voices have been heard in this process, that the concerns that they've raised, serious concerns, legitimate concerns about priorities, values, and adequate public notice, that those concerns have been heard.
Thank you, Senator. Any other discussion on the motion to amend? Any objections? Motion carries.
Senator Schroeder?
Madam Chair, I'd move House Bill 5100 as amended to be forward the due pass recommendation.
Senator Schroeder moves House Bill 5100 as amended to the floors with a due pass recommendation. Now, is there discussion on that motion? Senator Virgil.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I take bond debt very, very seriously, as I'm sure all of you do, and I greatly appreciate all the work that has been done by all of the projects that have ended up on this particular list and in this bill. However, Madam Chair, unfortunately on bills like this, we must say that we approve and accept all of this list in its entirety, and I will not be able to do that, so I will not be able to support House Bill 5100 at this time.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick point of clarification for me, at least, concerning the community college capital construction here. Is my understanding, and I just want to get clarification, this on the record, that an agreement has been reached with the community colleges for bond issues of about $42 million for the 09-11 biennium, which they have prioritized, less than $4 million already in this bill for CLATSIP, and I want to be sure that we own understand that rough agreement has been reached. We cannot buy future legislative assemblies. I'm not trying to, but I want to clear that was the agreement I understood was being brought forward for $42 million, less than $4 million, and that we're going to try to go forward with that in the next session if it's all possible.
I appreciate you bringing that forward, and I would characterize it as a rough agreement. The concept is that because of the unique nature of one project, the legislature is making an advance payment, essentially, and the Community College Association understands it that way. So thank you for that clarification. Mm-hmm. Any other discussion? Senator Schroeder.
2 points. One on that point, we do have signed letters from the community colleges on this, acknowledging the ceiling and at some point some inflationary adjustments going forward. But I think it's hopefully going to be part of our capital construction bonding discussion. We had that presentation a few days ago, and that would be a good thing to go forward. And so we have actually letters from the association, from the department, that I think everyone's on the same page and trying to do the right thing. The other comment, if I may, Madam Chair. I would draw people's attention or members' attention to the LC opinion from Senator Moore-Scott, who's obviously very interested in this project, too, and about the enforceability of the pledge agreement by the Knights that we've tried to cover our bases very, very thoroughly and make sure for the student's sake as well as the university's sake and the taxpayer's sake that we've covered things as closely as we can and draw your attention to that document.
Thank you. Senator Johnson.
Thank you. In keeping with the co-chair's call to all get on the same page, I just want to go back to the cap and understand what the number is. Or has that not been agreed to yet?
It's between 40 and 42, which means it's between 36 and 38.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Rough. Senator Bates had said rough.
Rough. It's 2 million rough.
Seeing no further comments, I would like to make a few comments on this bill. First of all, I'd like to remind the committee and the audience that this bill is about a number of significant and important capital construction projects that this state needs. We have spent a lot of time today and in previous hearings focusing on one of them, but let's not lose sight of the improvements that this bill will allow in our court system, in bringing that system into the 21st century, in improving the way we serve the public, in our interoperability network, which is significant in public safety for the state. It's an important step forward in the community college area, and not insignificantly in the Department of Higher Education. I appreciate, Mr. President, all the work your team has done to address the concerns that have been raised on this project for more than a month now. And I want to give you my personal thanks and appreciation for what you have done to help us protect the general fund for the services that it supports and to do other things to make sure that your university system is robust.
I also would like to extend my personal thanks to the Knights. This is the most significant philanthropic gift ever made to a university in Oregon. And I want to thank them for that. Yeah. It is not the only gift that they have made to our university system and specifically to the University of Oregon. And I want to thank them for that. And I want to let you and them know that we have, because it's our duty, made sure that every I is dotted and every T is crossed. But it in no way reflects any concern on our part about your integrity or theirs, and both of yours' willingness to follow through on the commitments you've made. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any objections to the motion? Senator Gordley, Senator Berger. Motion carries. Senator Schrader will carry in the Senate. Representative Morgan will carry in the House. Okay, close that work session. Open a work session on Senate Bill 5555. Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to. Do you need to stand down? The committee will be at ease for a few minutes while the paper gets distributed. Specific amendment language is new to you, but it reflects the discussion we had last night. So I'll ask Mr. Hill to kind of walk us through that, but it reflects discussions we've already had.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 5555 is the Capital Construction Expenditure Limitation Bill. As Madam Co-Chair just mentioned, again, there are three pieces of paper. One is a draft budget report, one of the dash three amendments to the bill, and the other one is the same summary form that we had yesterday, this time highlighting the all of those things that were approved by the committee at some point in time. I would like to point out that in the draft budget report, there is a list or a narrative section for each one of these projects. And in the back, there is also a spreadsheet that shows the amounts of each one of the projects. There are also two proposed budget notes, one of them pertaining to the University of Oregon Arena. I would like to point out, I think there is one typo in here. We're in second word on the second line, instead of University of Oregon Athletic Development, it should say department there. That word should be department. Sorry about that. There is also another proposed budget note for the item on page 6, the Clatsop Community College. And so the committee needs to approve both of those budget notes. And then in the dash 3 amendments, just as you said, all that's doing is implementing each one of these projects that you approved that's summarized on the spreadsheet.
Discussion. Will the information sifting into people's brains? As Chair Nathanson, I would entertain a motion on the budget notes. One at a time. Senator Carter moves the budget note on the Department of Higher Education. Discussion. With the amendment to department instead of development.
Absolutely.
Objections?
Representative Nathan Sue.
I move the budget note on the... Should we start at the beginning?
No, budget notes, please.
Budget note on Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development.
Here. Representative Nathan, budget note on the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. Discussion? Objections? Seeing none? Okay.
Madam Chair, you're going a little quickly here.
Oh,
okay?
Sorry. I'm sorry.
I'm going to check the budget notes of the discussion we just had a few minutes ago. It says 40 million, 36 million. We're talking about 42 and 38, so I'm just going to put my objection in place. Thank you.
And Senator Burley,
I need to go back and object to the arena budget note.
By the committee's leave, Senator Burley will object to the budget note on the Department of Higher Ed. I'm sorry, members, I'm not trying to push anything too quickly. Senator Burley will object to that budget note, and Senator Bates to the second one. And Representative Galizio to the second one.
To the second one.
Okay. Okay. Both budget notes still carry.
Yeah.
Do you need a minute? Okay. Would the committee like to stand at ease?
Yes.
Okay. Let's take 5-minute recess, 10-minute recess. Five-minute recess.
Good for you? Sure, I think I just want to have time to really look these over.
Well, and Senator, that's why I want to give you a bit of a recess to do that. Let's stand in recess for 10 minutes.
I'm okay with it. Don't worry about it.
When last we met our heroes, what were we doing?
Talking about budget notes.
You were moving something, I'm sure.
Yes.
Mr. Co-Chair. What was that?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I would like to... Did we move the dash or not?
No, we have moved both budget notes, and we have recorded a few objections, and we're done.
Okay. So I'll move the dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 5555.
Senator Schrader moves the dash 3 amendments into Senate Bill 5555.
Yeah.
Discussion on the motion to amend. Any objections?
Madam Co-Chair, I would move Senate Bill...
Wait a minute. No, Senator Bates is objecting to the...
No, I'm not objecting to that.
No objections. Motion to amend carries. Mr. Co-Chair.
Yes, I move Senate Bill 5555 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Schrader moves Senate Bill 5555 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on that motion. Senator Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate you giving us a couple of minutes to sort of check a couple of things out in these budget notes, of which this is a part. I just want to make a couple of real quick comments so we don't slow things down. First off, I shouldn't use this phrase probably, but as far as the budget note concerning the community college, I don't have my hair on fire about this for two reasons.
And the first one
is? I got no hair. The second one is, this is not a cap. It's showing support for this project. And what the project really is about is the community colleges have come together with a set of projects that they as a group want to have funded in this coming up session 09-11. The exact number for that is really not necessarily known. It is probably somewhere in the range of $38 to $42 million. We will need to work that out in the next session. And with that understanding amongst us here, I think it's wise to go forward with the budget note and wise to go forward with the bill. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion? Any objections to the motion to move the bill to the floor? Seeing none. Motion carries. Senator Schrader will carry to the Senate. Representative Galizio will carry to the House. Committee members, we have been such effective and efficient operators that we must attend some paperwork catching up with us. So I'm looking for an estimate of time.
Okay.
I would like to recess the committee until 6 o'clock. This is our last chance to get it right, folks, and so it has to be right. Our staff was all at the office. I got emails from Mr. Rocco at 11 o'clock and later last night. They have worked very hard, and we should not push them any harder than need be. So I will recess this meeting and work session until 6 o'clock. Convene the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Welcome back, colleagues, friends. It's still February 21st, 2008. And we are going to open a work session on House Bill. Is this one we're doing first? 5556. Senate Bill 5556.
Material we were just
doing 3626. Oh, that's one of our old ones.
Sorry.
Oh, I made a mistake. Oh, okay. We're opening a work session on House Bill 3626.
Program changes.
They're not asking me to carry this one. I need help here.
This is all on you.
What are we doing? Even a minute.
Colleagues, I will also call to your attention that we have posted another bill for tonight, which is 3607, which we will take up after the budget reconciliation bill and the program change bill. We will be using that bill to incorporate some language that would have gone into 3626, but for some concerns that Ledge Council had. So we will we'll talk about that when we get there, but it is related to the budget. The point I referenced last night relating to a fairly small, virtually technical fix for the cultural trust. Mr. Bender, on 3626.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. We've distributed three items to you relating to House Bill 3626. One is a one-page summary of the amendments that you have before you. The amendments that you have before you should be the House Bill 3626-16 amendments. We also have an information packet that includes a staff measure summary and a fiscal impact statement of the bill as we would produce them if you do adopt the Dash 16 amendments and report this bill out to your colleagues in the chambers. One thing I want to note is you may be aware that some of the materials that the committee is producing for this bill is different than a lot of the other bills you've seen. This is not an appropriation bill. This is the program change bill. Since there are no appropriations, we don't have a budget report, so there are no budget notes. Instead, we have the standard staff measure summary to report your actions to your colleagues on the floors, in the chambers, I should say. So what we have here for you, let me describe what is in the Dash 16 amendments in broad outline and then go into details as you may have questions. The Dash 16 amendments include all of the amendment sections that you approved at your work session yesterday to House Bill 3626, plus some additional items. Madam Co-Chair, it would be my intention really to talk about the additional items since the other ones were discussed.
Yes, certainly. Fine.
Okay. The place where there is new language compared with what you approved yesterday is the first item is that there was some changes to the language in the -8 amendment that you approved last time relating to the local disaster assistance loan account with the Oregon Military Department. There have been changes added to direct the Oregon Emergency Management to do rulemaking and expanding somewhat the members of the review board. So there are some changes that are included in the -16s to the -8 amendments as they're related to the local disaster assistance loan account in the Oregon Military Department.
There was a request by the Oregon Military Department, as I recall.
I believe that was at their request.
This is our student testimony about it yesterday in college. And we were responsive. We paid attention to the testimony.
Going back to the one-page chart that you have here, the next new amendment doesn't occur on the -16s until you get to page 10. And beginning on page 10, there's language added that we have not voted on yesterday to establish a health care delivery grant program with the Department of Human Services. And that language begins on page 10, line 5 of the -16 amendments, and continues through to page 12, line 1. I don't know if you, when you look at that language, if you have any specific questions. One of the grant, it does specify that there will be two grant projects, and that one of the grants will be awarded for a project that predominantly serves a rural area.
What the, if Mr. Slack, if I may, yes. For clarification, what this does, you did approve a $500,000 allocation for two primary care grants. This lifts the criteria from 3614 and puts it in our program change bill so the department will know how to effectuate that allocation.
It looks good. 3614.
And the other new item that was not considered by you yesterday in your work session on this bill is found on page 12 of the amendments before you, section 23, which requires the Department of Human Services to conduct an assessment of the community mental health care component of mental health care delivery systems in Oregon. So that also is included in Senate Bill 5556, which is your next item. There's funding for that in 5556. This is the statutory component that would go along with that that directs the department to conduct the assessment and evaluation. Otherwise, Madam Co-Chair and members, this language just contains the bill and the amendments that we approved yesterday.
And just for clarification on that last point, similarly, that language is direction to the department to implement the $150,000 appropriation that would be in the budget bill for the community mental health program targeted as had been directed in the original bill that has been folded in here. A moment to digest, or do we want to have discussion?
Madam Chair, I just wanted to say that for the benefit of my good friends in the Oregon Emergency Management family, I did quite a bit of reading today and looked very closely at what we have done to change things a bit. Their concern is a level of bureaucracy, the flow of the funds to the local areas. But I am satisfied that what has been done would not be as onerous as perhaps that is perceived.
Thank you for that, Senator. Any further discussion? Senator Bates.
Just wanted to thank you for keeping the original language in these two bills as far as the primary care home is concerned and making one a rural and one an urban very appropriate. And the mental health survey is also equally important. Thank you for making the language the same. It's been well vetted before they got to our committee, so it should work well. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator Gordley. Thank you very much. Madam Co-Chair, I would just like to acknowledge and appreciate the language on page 12, lines 15 and 16, which indicate that the mental health assessment will include an assessment of community mental health needs of particularly vulnerable populations in this state. And I am hoping that that language will mean that it's a focus on the underserved seniors, people living with disabilities, racial and ethnic populations. I'd like to get that on record and just make a point that that needs to be the intent. But that needs to be intent, but also a way in which we define vulnerable populations.
Thank you, Senator, and thank you for the opportunity to clarify that. The language that the Senator has referenced is largely out of Senate Bill 1089, but it also draws some language from Senate Bill 1075, and I know it doesn't do everything that 1075 would do, but we wanted to explicitly acknowledge that and give the department the direction, as you have put on the record. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And in relationship to Section 23, having to do with community mental health, it is with some disappointment that I look at this and see the omission of the amendments that were offered up on Senate Bill 1089. To basically marry this activity here with the hospital oversight committee that is currently in existence, and it, you know, that that disappointment comes from you know, quite a little search into you know, what has gone on. We looked specifically at the problem as it had existed in Hawaii, and you know, what they needed to do, what they found best to do in the solution to their problems, and the you know, I guess excuse me, what I would kind of see is a bifurcation of services between the state hospital and the community mental health programs. You know, I would not, is not as functional as I'd like to see it. I think Senator Carter, you know, initially introduced an idea, and it went through a process, was amended, and then Senator Carter and I tried to, you know, back in on that, and it is at least from my perspective a disappointment that I do not see that there. To say that I'm not going to support this, you know, because of that is not true, but I would like to have the record show that I think we're making just a little bit of a mistake here, and one that I hope Senator Carter will join me and Senator Winters and others of you too in ensuring that what takes place in relationship to the hospital, state hospital oversight, and what takes place in relationship to this section is carefully and diligently looked at by the legislative assemblies here. So with that, thank you, Madam Co-Chair, for that, for the record.
Madam Chair,
Representative Jensen, I don't think all is lost. I really do think that the President heard us and that he was intrigued by the idea of reconstituting and renaming the committee so that we would do exactly what our meeting was about. So this does not preclude it, even though it's not in here. He still has the authority to do so. And quite frankly, I think between the two of us, we made a very good argument and that he will follow through.
Thank you, Senator.
Anyway, I can't speak for him, but I really believe that the intent was well-meaning with the representative meeting with the President and that something of this nature will take place.
Thank you. Thank you. Good point. Representative.
I just want to thank Senator Carter for that. And and just again reemphasize that you know what I was saying is not a disappointment, but not a criticism.
Right.
And nothing that I'm going to you know vote against this because of, and something I'm going to ask all of you to help us to ensure that these two programs achieve the maximum amount of effectiveness that we possibly can.
Counting on you.
Thank you. Senator Winters. Yes, and I will go on record concurring with Representative Jensen and also Senator Carter. I think that it is important that we continue this linkage and the work that is going forward. You know, too often we have, particularly when we have dealt with mental health, that we have dealt with it in a very fragmented way. And it's that fragmentation that I think has led us to where we are today. So I would concur, and I know that the Senate President will is looking at the continuation. So, good. Thank you.
You ready for a motion, Madam Chair?
Mr. Co-Chair?
I'd like to move the Dash 16 amendments to House Bill 3626.
Senator Schrader moves the Dash 16 amendments to House Bill 3626. Discussion on the motion to amend. Any objections? Motion carries.
Madam Co-Chair?
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair.
I would like to move House Bill 3626 as amended to the floor of the DPAS recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Schrader moves House Bill 3626 as amended to the floors with the DPAS recommendation. Any discussion on that motion? Thank you, colleagues, for the hard work that you have all put into this. I think this is a very nice balance for a lot of interests across the state. Any objections? Seeing none? Senator Schrader will carry this on the floor, and I will carry it to the House. Close that work session. Open a work session on Senate Bill 5556. Ms. Baker, thank you for your good work. We'll stand at ease for just a few minutes. Thank you, sir. Absorb this, and so if I'm moving too fast, let me know. But I will ask the staff to go over the bill and the amendments in front of us and the budget report. Ms. Baker?
Thank you. Madam Co-Chair and members of the committee, what you have in your packet is Senate Bill 5556 with a markup of the Dash 5 amendments in the initial bill, which is the first three pages, and then the Dash 5 amendments are attached to that. Much of the substance is in the Dash 5 amendments because the original bill reflected just some early interim decisions of the Interim Committee on Ways and Means. And so I will walk through those in a little bit. Then we have a draft budget report, which summarizes the budget changes, and I'll walk through the budget notes that are included in that budget report so that you're aware of what is in there. But to get back to the amendments, as you can see, the original bill is substantially changed by the amendments based on the budget decisions that you approved last night. So there have been no changes, no additions, no deletions from those actions that you approved last night as far as the items that are in the bill amendments themselves. I will say that it is difficult because the bill is not organized in any necessarily coherent way to sometimes find particular items. So if you're interested in where a particular item might be in the amendments, I can try and point you to those. But it does reflect, again, the budget actions that you approved last night and told us to go ahead and get the amendments drafted for those. I would note that in the amendments, there are two changes that we are proposing to the Dash 5 amendments. Both have to do with particular language in Section 47. There is a phrase that we would have added to that. This is the allocation to the Water Resources Department. It's on page 14 of the amendments, Section 47. And we would add the phrase, or payment for direct services, to subsection 2 of that section to be consistent with how that has been described elsewhere. And then in Section 50, on the top of page 16, we would delete a reference to House Bill 3638. This is in reference to the $1 million appropriated to the Emergency Board for the Drug and Property Crimes Bill, because, again, to be consistent with other discussions, it's been determined that House Bill 3638 doesn't have a fiscal impact, and so the $1 million is for the provisions related to Senate Bill 1087. So those are the only changes that we would make to those Dash 5 amendments.
Thank you. Ms. Baker? Discussion or questions of staff or any of the representatives of agencies who are here? Dr. Schroeder?
I'll give members a chance to digest for a few minutes.
Okay. I'd like to ask a sort of a general question about 5556 and how it works. We're in the business of figuring out how to spend money and save money, and it's always in the context of what we know, what our best information is as of today. Things change. We know that there will be most likely an e-board meeting that happens in a few months to make some figure out where we are as of that time. My question has to do with when we have amounts of money that we've appropriated, what's within the purview of the e-board to make adjustments in how money is being spent? If something changes in the next 3 months and there's new information that a department has, we've been hearing recently about human services and changes in caseloads or changes in circumstances, for example. What is within the purview of an e-board to change?
Madam Co-Chair and Representative Nathanson, generally the authority of the Emergency Board is limited to making increases in expenditure limitations, other funds and federal funds expenditure limitations. Within agencies, shifting general funds between line items in the budget, if you will, appropriation lines for the budget, or allocating monies in the emergency fund or in special purpose appropriations that have been made to the emergency boards. Thanks.
Follow-up? Yes, I do have a follow-up. So, given that, and we know that there are difficulties, especially in human services, and I'm especially concerned about seniors and OPI, what is possible? Maybe this is more a comment than a question. I believe that from what I've heard, I hope that we do still have the flexibility and the ability to possibly consider additional appropriations for seniors or specifically for OPI, depending on the circumstances that exist at the time.
Thank you.
Any other questions, clarifications on the amendment?
Well, what we saw yesterday.
So the amendment is just the Dash 5 amendment. Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Ms. Baker, point me to the state police piece just briefly. I'm digging through, but I haven't got there yet.
There are two places for the state police. Yes, Section 37 on page 10 is the additional appropriation for the troopers.
Okay, there's the dollars, and there should be an FTE someplace?
The position in FTE authority, Madam Co-Chair, Representative Hanna, don't show up in the bill itself. They will show up in the budget report, which we'll get in the spreadsheet after we do the amendment. Representative.
Thank you.
Yes.
Madam Co-Chair.
Senator Gordon, please.
Thank you. If Ms. Baker could explain what's happening on page 4, lines 28, 29, 30, with seniors and people with disabilities. How do you understand that?
Madam Co-Chair and Senator Gordley, Section 15 generally are the changes in the Department of Human Services budget relative to their budget rebalance. It doesn't include the three additional general fund appropriations that were approved. But generally, the budget rebalance, there's pluses and minuses across the items in the department. For senior and people with disabilities particularly, I believe that general fund reduction is a net amount of changes in the rebalance identified for caseload savings, for a fund shift related to the federal match rate. There was an increase in federal funds, which allowed general funds to be reduced, and then offsetting those general fund reductions is the addition of the $11.8 million in the department's budget now for rate increases for community-based care in the seniors and people with disabilities budget. $11.8 million general funds and I believe about $19 million federal funds as well. So those are netted in those numbers. This is the bottom line change with all of the adjustments that were in the rebalance and approved by this committee.
Thank you, Ms. Baker. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Co-Chair.
Madam Co-Chair, I would like to move the -5 amendments to Senate Bill 5556.
Thank you. Senator Schrader moves the -5 amendments to Senate Bill 5556. Discussion on the motion to amend. Ms. Baker. Can I clarify that that motion is the -5 amendments as annotated by our office?
So moved, Madam Chair.
The hand engrossed -5 amendments.
That's what I meant.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Exactly, every minute.
Yes, I'm sure that's what he meant. Objections? Seeing no further discussion, any objections to the motion to amend? Seeing none. Motion carries.
Oh, we're going to do the budget notes.
Budget report first. I think we should do the budget report, please. Ms. Baker.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair and members of the committee. Then if you would turn your attention to the budget report, the draft budget report that we put together, I'll walk you through this fairly quickly. The first pages show the summary of all the pieces by agency that are affected by Senate Bill 5556 and for the Emergency Board Special Purpose Appropriations as well. So the columns compare the initial legislatively adopted budget coming out of session, the recommended budget with the adjustments that this committee is making. The third column shows those adjustments. Again, it's a net number of all the pluses and minuses in some cases, and then the percentage change from the legislatively adopted budget. So those items are laid out on pages 3 through 5, pages 2 through 5, and then starting on page 6 and page 7 is the position summary, again by agency, of the budget adjustment. So, for example, on the state police issue on the middle of page 6, public safety program area shows Department of Justice, Department of State Police. Third column over shows the addition of the 39 trooper positions. There is 1.54 FTE because my understanding is the intention is to have those positions come online in June of 08.
been consistent with their current recruiting schedule.
Yes.
And then as the budget is developed for 09-11, of course, that full-time equivalent will increase based on the full-time nature of those positions.
Okay. Thanks.
Then starting, Senator Monroe, did you have a question?
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify. I believe I heard her say June of 08, and I think you mean June of 09.
Thank you, Senator. Yes.
That's an affirmative matter.
Yes, thank you.
Time flies.
Ms. Becker?
Thanks. Starting on page 8, there is more detail on each of the adjustments that are included in the bill with some narrative that is intended to reflect the intention of the committee relative to those budget adjustments. So I won't necessarily go through each of those in detail, but you can read those. I would like to focus on the budget notes that are in the budget report. On page 10, there's a budget note for Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. So right above the Human Service Program area discussion, there is the budget note for the commission there.
I don't think so. Senator, Representative Shields?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we've all become alarmed about the safety of our kids in light of the Oregonians' findings on repeat sexual abuse in our schools, and so I'd like to move that budget note into Senate Bill 5556A.
Great. Thank you. It has come to our attention due to the good advocacy of many members on this committee and on our floors. So it is something that we're responding to. I'll take your motion as soon as we're ready to move any budget notes. Thanks.
Acknowledging the budget note.
The next budget note, then, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, is on page 13, the top of page 13. This is a budget note for Department of Human Services, directing a report to the Emergency Board on the Children's Health Insurance Program and the Medicaid Poverty Level Medical Program for children. Go ahead. Next budget note is on page 15, Criminal Justice Commission, and there is a related budget note on page 23 for the Judicial Department, and this pertains to the Public Safety Agency Data Sharing Work Group and a directive to those agencies on reporting on their work with that work group and associated with the E-Court project. And then the final budget note is, there are two more. There's a budget note for Housing and Community Services Department on the bottom of page 17. This is directing that department to reprioritize programs within its existing budget to come up with $1 million match for the $1 million general fund appropriated for affordable housing preservation. And then the final budget note is on page 18, and that relates to the Department of Land Conservation and Development, the Task Force on Land Use Planning, so the 30-year land use review, and it's requiring a report on that effort.
I'll open discussion on the budget notes and go back to Representative Shields.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Would you like me to re-issue the motion?
Let's put that motion out, and if there's discussion, we can have a discussion. But
yeah. I move the budget note for Teacher Standards and Practices Commission on page 10 into Senate Bill 5556A.
Okay. Thanks. Representative Shields has moved the budget note on page 10. Discussion on that motion. Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you, Chair Nolan. What I note here is not a date in this budget note when the TSPC should come to either board. And I think earlier in the session, the better, like the day after tomorrow, would be a good time to begin.
I agree with you. And I think that those who are in the audience will get that message loud and clear.
Thank you.
Thank you for clarifying. Good point. Any other discussion? Motion for the budget note. Any objections? Sure. Representative Nathanson.
Madam Chair, the next budget note that I'd like to consider is on page 13. I'd like to move the budget note. It's under the health services section. It's in the human services program area, Department of Human Services, section for health services, the budget note that begins at the top of page 13. I'd like to move that into Senate Bill 5556A.
Representative Nathanson moves the budget note on page 13 of the budget report. Discussion? Objections? Done. Who's next? Criminal Justice. Sure, Representative Nathanson.
I'd like to move the budget note on page 15 under the section Public Safety Program Area Criminal Justice Commission. I'd like to move that into 5556A.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Nathanson moves the budget note on page 15 of the budget report. Discussion? Objections? Done. Representative Nicholson, you're on a roll.
I'd like to move the budget note at the bottom of page 17. It's under the Economic and Community Development Program area. Housing and Community Services Department.
Thank you. Representative Nathanson moves the budget note on page 17 of the budget report. Discussion? Objections? Done. Representative Nathanson, you bet.
Under the Natural Resources Program area on page 18, I'd like to move the budget note under Department of Land Conservation and Development.
Representative Nathanson moves the budget note on page 18 of the budget report. Discussion? Objections? Done.
I see a final one that I'd like to move on page 23. It's under Judicial Branch, Judicial Department. A budget note, I'd like to move that one to 5556A.
Okay, Representative Nathanson moves the budget note on page 23 of the budget report. Is there discussion? Representative Smith.
I have just a question of the co-chair. Thank you. Since the E-Board hasn't met and we do run these budget notes, do we have a schedule for when they are going to be meeting?
Representative, the speaker and the president chair the emergency board, so we can't speak definitively for them, but it is our understanding that they intend to meet in June.
Okay.
The first one.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for the clarification. Objections on the budget note? None.
Madam Co-Chair.
Mr. Co-Chair.
I can move Senate Bill 5556 as amended and with the budget notes approved to the floor of the DFAS recommendation.
Senator Schrader moves Senate Bill 5556 as amended, incorporating the budget report with the budget notes we have just approved to the floors with the DPAS recommendation. Discussion on that motion. Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. On page 17 in the discussion of the state police piece, I'd like to have clarification for the record, please, of the language that's used in the bottom of the first paragraph under the statement, the Department of Administrative Services requested to unschedule this amount until the agency is able to, one, recruit and fill 100 new positions, as well as any other positions that become vacant because of retirement. What's the intent there?
Mr. Wilson, thanks.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee. They have something called a recruitment plan called Plan 200, I believe. And of that, they plan to recruit for the 100 new positions, and they also estimate that because of turnover, attrition, retirement, there's another estimated 50 positions that will have to be filled during that time period. And so the intent there is to unschedule those funds until they fill the 100 new positions, any attrition related positions, and then those new positions could be filled based on what's in the budget.
Follow-up?
Yes, follow-up.
Doug, I'm getting technical here, but I get nervous about these things. It says any other positions. Are we talking trooper positions? And let me follow up. And there's certainly an ongoing vacancy rate within any agency. Mm-hmm. I would hate to find out that this agency got held to as well as any other position. If they were within a normal vacancy rate, we didn't allocate the funds. It just makes me a little bit nervous, Madam Chair, and it doesn't say trooper positions. It says any other position. I just want to have clarification.
Representative, I think it's important to put it on the record what's intended there, so that's fine. Mr. Wilson?
The intent of that language is trooper positions.
An Auburn permit.
May I just ask for clarification on that? Because I think that as we did get reports from the state police in the emergency board in the previous interim, it became very clear that there was an ongoing vacancy rate, that they really couldn't fill 100% of the positions 100% of the time. So is it also the intent of the budget note to acknowledge that there will be unfilled positions, a certain number of unfilled positions, just because of the regular course of doing business?
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, I believe it does. And keep in mind, though, that they do have to fill all these positions. Even, you know, if they're vacant, they're going to be in the process of filling them anyways. And these all become available based on the budget at the end of the biennium in the final month.
We should dot these I's and cross these T's, so go ahead and follow up.
Well, I would just hope that it would be clear that we would acknowledge that there is an ongoing rolling number of vacancies just by the virtue of the nature of the agency. And so if we hold them to a standard of no vacant positions, we really are never going to get there.
If I might. The language is about unscheduling the funds, not the positions. And so if there are vacancies, then there will be vacancy savings. It is our intention that the department have the budget authority and the money to fill those positions as consistent with their recruiting effort, and that we won't hold them to normal turnover that happens.
Thank you.
Good points. Anybody else? Any objections?
Thank you, colleagues.
Senator Schrader, you want to carry this bill?
Thank you, ma'am.
And I will carry it to the House. Close that work session. One more work session. Open a work session on House Bill 3607. Mr. Siebert?
I'm begging you not to.
Easy fix. Getting punchy here, colleagues. Hang in there for about five more minutes. Mr. Siebert.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, being passed out is a packet that has a copy of the -83 amendments for House Bill 3607, a draft fiscal impact statement for the version of the bill that would include the 8-83 amendments, and a draft staff measure summary, and a copy of the bill. House Bill 3607 is relating to state financial administration, which makes it very popular this time of session. And as such, you have the -83 amendments, which replace the contents of the bill, except for the emergency clause, with the following, which will provide an exemption for the cultural trust to use monies collected from the sale of cultural trust license plates for promoting and marketing of the program, and this would be an exceedance of the statutory limit of 7.5% for administration of the monies distributed from the fund in any one year.
Colleagues, if I might, this has come to my attention because the Cultural Trust has an opportunity to increase its capacity to bring in donations, which will increase their corpus and therefore increase the capacity for them to make grants to local arts programs. And this basically gives them a one-year challenge to prove that they can do it. Discussion. And take the time, because this is brand new, folks. Discussion?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair.
Move the Dash A3 amendments to House Bill 3607.
Senator Schrader moves the Dash A3 amendments to House Bill 3607. Discussion on the motion to amend. Any objections? Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Last bill of the February 2008 session. I would like to move House Bill 3607 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Moves House Bill 3607 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion. Any objections? Senator Johnson, I think you want to carry this.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, and thank you for your help.
And I will carry it, or I will let you know who else will carry it. Howard, yes, Co-Chair.
Well, this is we're finished. I would like to say this has been a bit of a journey in our short 3 weeks plus in Salem doing the state's business. The public at large will end up deciding whether or not this was worthwhile or not. I will tell you this, and I came to this session with a great deal of skepticism about the advisability, just to be terribly honest. But I have seen at least some good things come out of this that I did not expect. The most important thing I take away from this is Co-Chair Ways and Means is the processing of the bills. I was worried, indulge me for a moment, and I'd be curious about your own feelings on this, but I was worried that in October, December, and January, we're trying to get some of this stuff done, towards February, remember that, we're going to approve this, and we delayed some things, and we hashed over some things, are we really making progress? Is this just really good use of the members' times? And then we come to February session, and I find that the Ways and Means membership as a whole, not just the co-chairs, actually know what's going on to a large degree. You guys are always suspicious. We know a lot more than you do, but that is not necessarily the case. And it showed in the last few days. The first weeks or two, we went through the DHS rebalance in excruciating detail, but appropriately. And at least from my vantage point, while there's never enough information for my thirsty investigative Ways and Means people, it showed that in the last 2 days, what is oftentimes a black box, frankly, is not a black box. And I would like to think that the members had a lot more information at their disposal to vote as they felt they should or should not in the last days of the session. And I was very impressed with how the hearing went last night, and I'm very impressed with how the hearing went to this night. And hope this is part of an ongoing opportunity to try and open the process up at least a little bit. And I also feel sorry that some members didn't get all they wanted. That's just the nature of the beast. But I think overall, I hope you all felt like you were included a little bit more than perhaps we had been in the past.
Yes, he almost answered my question. Because this is historic, and because it's not been done before, I think that I would like to know, Senator Schrader, from your vantage point, and looking strictly at the budget, not at any other thing that happened during this time, if what advantages you saw to coming back and looking at the budget in 1 year rather than in two?
Well, I would say from my standpoint, there are probably several. One is very obvious. Although we couldn't predict it, there was a significant revenue shortfall. And whether that occurred in September of last year, December of last year, or February of this year, we had three quarters where if there had been a shortfall, it would have been the emergency board only that might have addressed that or talked about that. And we had the opportunity, rightly or wrongly, to be here and all the members to share and own that. The other thing that I like is the way the emergency, the Ways and Means process worked. As I just stated, I think that's a huge benefit, so there's buy-in. It's not the SWAMI emergency board that's doing it. It's actually knowledgeable members, if I may say so, from the Ways and Means Committee that actually participated for the most part in last session's deliberations looking at what we're doing now. And that, to me, the continuity is extremely valuable, the institutional memory that we actually build. I think that's a huge plus. And then, frankly, with the rebalance, we do rebalances regardless, economy up, down, or sideways, and that could apply to the Corrections Department, and it did apply, certainly, to the Department of Human Services. And again, rather than having a few people do this, although it was a little painful for some of us that don't serve on the subcommittee, Senator Johnson commented on that a few times in our session, we all became a little bit familiar with the trials and tribulations that Senator Carter and members of her committee had to deal with. So I think that's a good opportunity for us to do that, so we begin to understand that the budget that the co-chair sees is a bigger budget than we deal with on our subcommittees. So I thought that was very helpful. And then the other piece, rightly or wrongly, there are several big picture policy items that we didn't address during session. The state troopers, we left without doing the 24/7. It got to be hectic at the end. We're trying to make budget priorities. We were able to adjust budgets. The affordable housing opportunity came forward. I didn't know about that, frankly, during session. We did a lot of great work during session for them. Here's an opportunity that I understand would have gone away. We have a disaster on the coast, so we have this. All of a sudden, we start building in an ongoing mitigation fund for disasters that we just didn't have before, and we're stepping up to the plate with at least $500,000 to help our counties that we would not have anticipated. So, and I can go on with a few other items, but I guess I see, like I said with my opening remarks, a lot more value than I might have anticipated with an annual budgetary adjustment session.
What is the schedule? Oh, if I may.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you. The schedule for the joint Ways and Means Committee for the rest of the interim leading up to the start of emergency board.
I don't, as Chair Nolan said, I don't think we have an exact schedule. It is our desire, and we've communicated this with the President and the Speaker, to have not just the emergency board meet maybe two or three times prior to session 09, but actually have a little time carved out for the Ways and Means Committee to meet. Either we're struggling with this the day before, afternoon before, trying to fit it into your schedules to make it a coherent time slot, since many of you travel from far away, to look at what our budget's going to be for 2009 and have you all play into those decision-making processes once again, so it's not just the governor's budget or the co-chair's budget. We will hopefully be thinking about what we're going to do based on current revenue forecasts.
Representative Teresa.
I just wanted to recognize once again the remarkable work that LFO staff does. The fear that we must evoke when we talk about annual sessions or coming in this building and invading their territory, it must be amazing, but they just do such a phenomenal job. It's such a privilege to be able to work with these folks. So.
And while he's in the room, I would include in that the staff at the Legislative Council office, whose night is not over, colleagues. Thank you, Dexter, and to all of your...
The revenue folks don't get any kudos because you lost under $9 million. Obviously.
And the hour is late, and I will not keep us much longer, but one of the things that, in some response to Senator Wardley's question, that the Senate co-chair and I would like to do during the interim is help position the legislative branch to get a little bit ahead as we prepare to move into the regular session of 09 and be more proactive on shaping the budget and not strictly reactive. So, colleagues, we will look to you for your counsel, your ideas, and your good wisdom as we try to pursue that. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm adjourned.
Thank you.